All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Purge Podcast. I'm here with Jason Barker, and today we are going to be addressing a major question that actually you brought up in our previous stream on your podcast that kind of inspired me to go all out on the topic today because I think it's important to discuss. And that is the question of, is taxation theft? Now, there's many schools of thought on this. Obviously, I feel like for me personally, I have to fall somewhere in the middle with that question. But, and of course, anyone that's in the chat, I'd love to, we'll read your comments aloud and would love to know your opinions on this as well. But before we kind of dive into this subject today, for anyone who's one of my viewers who may not know you, do you mind just introducing yourself?
Sure. I'm Jason Barker. I'm one of the hosts of Knights of the Storm, which is kind of a collaboration of folks. Angry Tiger, Angus Mustang, Karen Carpenter's been on there. A ton of people. We're listeners of David Knight that kind of got together and started our own little show. And then I also do the Foxhole podcast, which is on Thursdays. What is it, like eight to nine Eastern? And I kind of look at things from a military aspect because I am prior military, retired. And so that's the two things I do online, just that's pretty much it.
Yeah, very cool. What's the difference between the two podcasts with Knights of the Storm and Foxhole?
Knights of the Storm, we kind of look at all things geopolitics from a broad angle. And the Foxhole, I try to look at it from kind of a military angle because I realize that we are under attack. That's 100%, whether it's finances, it's our housing, it's our schools, so we
Yeah, the
kind of worry
border.
the border, our food. I mean, it's a multi-pronged attack from many different angles. So I kind of break down each one and look at them individually. Whereas Knights of the Storm, we kind of look at the current events,
Okay, very cool. Well, yeah, let's just dive right into it. So we were kind of talking earlier in the week, actually, about, well, you basically brought up the fact that in the welfare state that we're in currently, that you should not really have the right to vote if you do not pay into the system. And now this was also followed up by some historical facts that back in the day, and we're talking like the founding of the country, you actually had to own land to be able to vote. And most females didn't own land and they technically didn't have the right to vote anyways. But also that just kind of wasn't a thing that, females owned land back then. By process of elimination, they couldn't vote. So it left really just the men of the country, wealthy men that could pay into the system to be able to vote. So what are your thoughts on this now? Because obviously now it's fair game. Anyone can vote. In fact, you don't even have to have an identity. You could be in the grave and still vote.
Yeah, right. Vote early, vote often.
Right.
I just know the statistics. Last time I checked them, about 47% of Americans paid net zero in taxes. So that means, you pay your sales tax and your property tax if you own a house and things like that. But when it comes to the income tax, by the time you get your return back at the end of the year and you've got all your deductions, you're actually getting back more than you paid in. And I don't think that's sustainable. I think that, especially if you're on some kind of a bunch of welfare programs, of course, you're going to vote to take other people's money and put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
So I just really think you need to be able to prove that you have a stake in it. And we hear this term stakeholder capitalism, right? Which
Sure.
is completely garbage. I mean, that's people that don't even live in this country that have a lot to say with our politics
Yeah, and
and our
just to
policy.
yeah, it, well, and just to kind of elaborate for people that don't understand what stakeholder capitalism is, well, it's essentially lobbyists paying into a company or vice versa, companies paying into, well, actually, that's what it would be for lobbying, companies paying into congressional members to get policies passed in their favor, in a nutshell.
Yeah, and if you look at the World Economic Forum and the UN, all their documents, they use that word. They've been using it for about a decade now. the stakeholder were.
Sure.
You're not American. You shouldn't have a say in this country, but they like to play it on that end. But when it comes to us, what happens in our communities, they don't want to play the same game. You know what I'm saying? Like, where, okay, let the people who actually pay into the system, that it's on their backs to pay for all the necessities we need, whether it's roads or schools or whatever, let them have a choice. But we're
sure
overshadowed by the people who pay nothing into the system. So, of course, they're going to vote for more welfare. They're going to vote for open borders. They're going to vote for all this free stuff.
Sure.
Sustainable. I mean, it's not.
So you're saying that basically people that don't pay taxes are just going to, they're going to vote in their favor that does not favor the working man, essentially.
Absolutely. Let's just say, okay, let's look at it in a smaller, like a micro, macrocosm or microcosm. Let's say I work at McDonald's as a fry chef, right?
And I did that actually in high school.
Well, let's just say that all the people who have nothing invested in the company, we don't own any stock, we don't pay the mortgage, we don't pay the payroll, but we get to vote together to decide what the salary is going to be.
Okay, sure. That, right? Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I'm talking. I mean, we're all making $100 an hour to sit on our phones all day and not serve the customer. That's not sustainable. It's just not.
Absolutely. Well, another thing that, you know, I actually didn't really think about this in depth until I was having this conversation with someone else, that every single president that we've had is independently wealthy. Now, this is kind of common sense, right? Like, it actually makes sense that that would have to kind of be a cause and effect situation, I guess, because if you had to work, right, if you're worried about a paycheck, you can't really make sensible decisions per se about the country. But at the same time, if you're independently wealthy, where you just don't need the money and you like money, then you have other negative incentives that could go along with that as well. Now, from what I'm aware, statistically speaking, actually, and this is probably no surprise, if we were to bring the numbers with inflation into 2023 with all the presidents combined, George Washington would have been the second most wealthy president of all time. Number one would be Donald Trump.
Well, I want to point one thing out here. I remember when the Clintons left the White House, I think it was Hillary that said that they, to get the sympathy feeling, you know, feel like get the sympathy from the people, because she knew she was going to run later, said that they left the White House broke.
That's what Clinton said? That's what Hillary Clinton said?
Yeah, it was either Hillary or Bill. One of them said that they left the White House because, you know, to say, oh, we didn't take the money, we didn't take the... Well, then how'd you become multimillionaires?
Well, here's the
foundation a year later.
Well, here's the only thing that might support that argument is the fact that Bill Clinton was addicted to cocaine while he was in the White House.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking to myself, we got some people that can't manage. You pay for nothing. Everything is provided for you when you're president. You don't pay a damn thing.
Yeah.
So, how did you leave broke, and do I really want you in charge of my fiscal policy?
You know? Yeah, well, and I think that's why they started that presidential act. I can't remember what year it was. I want to say it was around maybe the 40s that they had a basically retirement plan for presidents, because I can't remember which president it was actually came out of the White House like broke, like piss poor, to where he could not. Yeah. Literally have like even a house almost, and I think that's actually also where the occurrence of the Secret Service, became a thing, where it's like, hey, for the rest of your life, you know, you're going to have private security. Hey, John. Hey, Karen. Good to see you. So what are your thoughts, I guess, on, being independently wealthy as the president? Like, what is the happy medium, or should it be that way? I mean, it's kind of hard to not be that way.
I think it's kind of if you don't have to worry about managing a business. Now, I know Donald Trump, when he was voted in, he did one decent thing, which is he signed his stuff over into a trust so sure. that he had no interest. Now, does that stop people from getting favors? He's going to take it back over eventually. But I think it's kind of cool if they got money that they don't have a vested interest in doing something that might be against the better judgment, you know?
Yeah.
but at the same time, you know, I'm kind of in the middle there, because people who are independently wealthy, maybe they're legacy people, they were born wealthy, they have no idea what the average plight is.
We have the statement, right? We the people. Mm-hmm. If you are independently wealthy, and again, not a good or a bad thing, but are you for the people at that point? Are you one of us, the people, if you have so much money that you don't have to care about us paying into the system, if that makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. You can't relate to people. Just like if I grew up in the country, out in the woods, I can't relate to somebody who lives like in the city, in an urban environment. You know, I don't know. I think there's pros and cons to both sides of that coin. I do know that you can't be president unless you're absolutely wealthy, because there's so much money involved in politics, and that's a bad thing that we don't have that option.
Yeah. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but again, around the founding of the country, this would have been what is now considered to be Jeffersonian America. I could be wrong about this, but I'm actually like 99% sure that 100% of Congress was all volunteer. No one was paid a salary at all.
I don't know. I think they might have got a stipend for their time, but they, you know, back then the Congress didn't live in Washington. Mm-hmm. I think it was Philadelphia originally, wasn't it?
It was Philadelphia. Right. Yeah, DC actually. It was after George Washington.
Yeah, they went up there when they had to handle business, and then they went back to their farms or their factories or whatever, you know, whatever they did in their normal life. A lot of them were lawyers. They were doctors. It wasn't a full-time job. And I think that I really think,
yeah, that's what it is. It wasn't a full-time job.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a service to country. And I think we need to bring that back. And I think we could do that by limiting not just terms, but like total service.
Yeah. Right.
So you serve as a governor, you serve as a senator, maybe you're the president, but after 20 years or 15 years, or, you know, you put a number on it, you're done. You're out.
Yeah.
You can't suck off the government teat your whole life, you know?
Yeah. And I kind of want to go back to the statement you're talking about, where like a lot of politicians, and this is the reason why I do what I do. In fact, when I started doing like the, citizen journalism stuff in the small towns, it was basically because I was tired of seeing the suits like ABC or CNN, you know, go in and basically fabricate a story, you know, and it's always like Men in Black, essentially, that you see going into, you know, all these areas and, you know, handing you a microphone in your face and with like a big camera crew. Right. And I think that separation of culture right there in itself is unrelatable. Like, and I think that trickles in to the Senate, the House, the White House, even, of course. And all these people are out of touch with reality. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a new serfdom where we're the plebs, we're the useless plebs down here. And if you can get into politics, you become one of the lords.
Yeah.
Right. So you can call yourself a lord. You know, you're not quite in charge. You're not the king. Okay. Nobody knows who that is. That's the guy up there that's pulling the strings. And maybe it's Soros. Maybe it's Gates. I don't know.
Well, I think even Soros is a peasant in his own right.
But no, yeah, you're right though. And I have one question for the audience. When your senator, congressman, congresswoman, whatever, when they go into an office year one and they're worth, I don't know, $300,000 and they make whatever, $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year, whatever it is, and they come out multimillionaires, how does that happen?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about like Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. Exactly. How does that happen? So they're not serving we the people. They're serving themselves to get higher up in that ladder.
Yeah. Well, I think that's definitely the term limit kind of plays a part into that. You know, when you don't have a term limit, you basically become an insider. I mean, that's where that term comes from, insider trading. And all of that, you know, so you're basically, you're an insider, you're an elite, you're out of touch with reality. But then what happens, and this is what I've noticed from just living in California, is that all these policies get passed to basically keep the lower class down so they keep voting for the same thing. That's how you get, that's how you get the ghettos, essentially, in these small towns. And that's also how you get, little towns like Barstow. I don't know if you know where that is.
Yeah, I know where Barstow is. Yeah,
yeah, like Barstow is like completely, really demolished as a town, which is, in my opinion, due to the policies in the bigger cities that have kind of suppressed them financially and economically speaking. And also they have no voting power because the population is too small, but they're in the same, they share the same state, right, as California. But the population is just not big enough to actually have a say in their state. Like they should just be a different state. If you get what I'm saying.
we had the same problem in, New York has the same problem. You've got New York City dominates the politics for the whole state. And New York's actually a pretty big state, and the people up north think way differently than the people in the city. Same problem in Illinois with Chicago. You name it, any even Georgia. Georgia now, it's kind of a blue state now because of Atlanta.
Yeah, well, let's talk about. I want to talk about the New York thing for a second too, because I actually was just in New York maybe last year. Now it's coming up on a year ago that I was actually in upstate New York. And New York is definitely, it's kind of funny actually, the way I kind of lay this out, whenever I go to all these places in America, I basically gauge the tax revenue on how the roads are. So like, in Texas, as you're crossing, because Texas has got like a billion counties, as you're crossing the roads in Texas, you'll say a new sign like such and such county. All of a sudden, the road just becomes a pile of crap. And then like 5 miles later, you'll cross another county and the road immediately, like within crossing, the sign changes.
Yep.
And I noticed that when I was in the Rust Belt up in upstate New York near Buffalo and Niagara Falls. So I was coming in from Pennsylvania and the roads are iffy in Pennsylvania. I mean, it just is an old place. And that's even a toss-up, right, on the tax revenue and between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh primarily. But when I got into New York, instantly, probably the worst roads I have been through in America. I am straight up serious about this. As soon as I crossed the state line, like literally upon crossing the sign, potholes like to the point where it was going to wreck my vehicle. And that was in upstate New York, I literally made a comment when I was, there that like they've literally stolen the tax money because they have such high taxes there. Why are the roads this messed up?
In New York's defense, though, I lived in upstate for 3 years. They have a limited time to work on them because of the weather.
Okay.
And I'm talking about upstate. I'm talking about, I lived in Watertown, New York, which is about 20 minutes from Canada. And, we maybe had 3 or 4 months out of the year that there wasn't snow and ice on the ground, and they do a lot of plowing. But yeah, I did also notice though that there was no industry left.
Yeah.
When you take away your bread and butter, you can't tax industry because you've overtaxed them. They've left the state or they've gone overseas. Then now you got to tax the people, but then half the people now are on the dole. So they're not paying into taxes. You run out of revenue.
Yeah, well, that's what I've noticed in that whole region, actually, is that, like, there's no money at all. Like, there's just nothing. There is no, because this is what I realized during COVID, which now saying that word has probably gotten the stream banned. But what I noticed during COVID, okay, is that all of basically the cycle of money just comes to a stop. Right. You don't have money coming in. You don't have money going out. So therefore, everything comes to a halt. Nothing is getting paid for. But I noticed up in this part of America, like the Rust Belt, that they already didn't have that. There is just no money to be had. Therefore, you're right. There's no infrastructure, which is probably most of the reason why the roads are messed up. But at the same time, with specifically the state of New York, I mean, they have like ridiculously high taxes. I want to say I paid like 20 toll roads in one day going through upstate New York, just traveling?
Well, here's one for you. So when I lived there, and this was, I went there in 2012, I believe, a pack of cigarettes was over $10.
Back and, then? Wow.
Yeah. And like $9 of it was tax.
Wow.
So it was ridiculous. And the same thing, you know, gasoline. Actually, gasoline wasn't that bad. Kind of national average, maybe a little higher. But everything was taxed to the hilt. And it's because they don't have any industry left. And New York City is kind of its own thing because they have the ports and they have, you know, import, export, and they have tourism. They got it kind of going on. But the rest of the state, it kind of sucks, man, because there was a big air brake factory right down the road from me. And while I lived there, in the 3 years I lived there, they closed down half of that plant and they demolished the building.
So you think that they just overcharge on taxes because they actually just don't have any money?
Well,
like they're just trying to like compensate basically
When you get enough people on the dole, you've got to come up with that money somewhere. Right. Sure. It's not like the federal government that could just print more money and take it from your bank account, because that's what it does. When they print money, they dilute what your money is worth that you worked hard and saved for. It doesn't buy half the goods that it used to buy. So printing money at the federal level is actually theft from people who actually worked, spent their time, and stored that labor. On the state level, all you can do is try to go after businesses, because now, you know, 50% of the people are on some kind of welfare. You're not getting no money from them. It's better to stay home and not work, you know, and have a couple kids or whatever. Be married. That's another way. You know, if you get married, that takes incentive away, or not incentive, takes the money away. I mean, there's a lot of ways people scam the system, but, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy as well. If you tax the businesses out, then people don't have a place to work. So sure. They end up being jobless, you know, and it's just a bad situation, and they can't afford to leave the state.
You know? So I guess that kind of brings me to my next question then. I mean, you just basically said how the government printing money is committing theft, and then when they tax you on it, right? And there's obviously a broad, I mean, literally, I titled the podcast today, Is Taxation Theft? Which is what I'm going to ask you is the question, is taxation theft? Obviously, we know that we started out on the tariff. Now, I believe under Thomas Jefferson, farmers never saw tax in their life under his presidency, which makes a lot of sense. Like, you don't want to tax the people that are literally providing you with goods so you can live, right? Which, you know, obviously we're seeing the opposing of that now. But now we've gone basically into a almost, and I don't want to say socialist, because the way of Europe has actually gone socialist mostly. Like, if you go to a country like Sweden, they have, now to their credit, they have like a ridiculous amount of social programs through the government, but they're a socialist country. Us not being a socialist country, or at least by definition, we're not supposed to be. We're getting taxed to the point of a socialist country. Mm-hmm. Where is the fine line that you see of tax? Is taxation theft, I guess, in general? And then if not, where does that line end?
Well, taxation is theft, because it's just taking money from you and using it for something else, which generally means going to somebody else. So it's wealth redistribution, and it's a tariff. You know, we talk about free trade, and we don't want to, you know, have a trade war with China and tariff, that we don't want to tariff them. But, you know, you're getting tariffed every time you buy something. You're getting taxed, right? Your income is taxed, your house is taxed. Now, as far as whether or not it's okay, I think on the federal level, absolutely not, because the federal government, and that was the problem with the Articles of Confederation, by the way. There was nothing wrong with those. It was very, very similar to our Constitution. The problem was it didn't provide a means to actually fund the government.
Sure.
It was kind of like everything was a voluntary, you know, let's just say New York gets attacked by England and they call on the other states to help. Well, the other states might come. They might not, you know.
That's an interesting premise, actually.
That's what it was. But now, on playing the devil's advocate here, I would say on a county level, if my money is being taken to pay for roads, schools, things like that, something that goes back to me, and I've agreed to live in this county, so I've signed that social contract saying I'm going to live here, And I agree to pay this tax because it's going to make my roads nice. It's going to keep the street lamps on in the city. I think that's okay because that's a social contract that you kind of like, you don't sign it, but you kind of agree to it by living there. You could always move, you know.
Do you feel like that should be optional though, regardless? Or do you think if you live in a place and you know you're going to have to pay tax there, that that's what you're signing up for?
Well, I mean, if I moved into an apartment building and everybody could live there rent free, but everyone kind of kicks in $50 a month or whatever, I feel like I'd be a freeloader if I didn't kick in the $50 a month as well.
Sure. Okay.
You know? And that's what I'm talking about on like a county level or
so
a
city level. If you buy land at a place, mm-hmm. you should pay tax on the local.
So I think the only good that comes from property tax is for public school, which sucks, by the way. But I think that if you don't have kids in school, you shouldn't pay property tax to go to schools. You know, why are you going to pay that in perpetuity?
So basically,
the rest of your life.
Yeah. So basically, you're saying, okay, so get rid of the property part. You're just saying if you live in a certain county inside of a state, like your local community, if you're going to choose to live there and be a citizen in the community, that you feel as though you should pay tax just for the community stuff. For you living there.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, for the common areas, the stuff that we all enjoy and benefit from, I think everybody should kick in for it. And if you don't like that, then you could always move to some other place where they don't charge that, you know? So
sure.
It's kind of an unwritten or unsigned contract that says, I agree, okay, it's going to cost me $1,000 a year to live here, but, you know, they put the Christmas decorations up in the wintertime and they keep the streets plowed from the snow, you know, things like that. You
sure.
enjoy those benefits. So my money is going to something that benefits me and my family, not just going to some empty pocket somewhere to fill it.
Absolutely. So in terms of the federal aspect of that, how do you find the solution in terms of federal taxes?
Do away with the Fed.
Well, how? So obviously right now the federal taxes claim that they are you know, well, they basically just claim they're helping the federal government. What is the solution for not helping the federal government? Because obviously, I think every American actually would probably not like to help the federal government and aid and abet them.
All right. First thing, we need to like get people out that have been there for their entire lives.
Okay.
Because they skim off the top. All of our wars. The reason people vote us to go to war is so that some other business can sell some missiles and then those monies come back in campaign contributions. So, you know, if I'm a Joe Schmucky politician and I vote to go to war, for every $1 million that's spent to buy missiles and Humvees and bullets and things like that, I might get 100,000 back in campaign contributions. That is so inefficient. So
yeah.
Absolutely inefficient. So we got to get the politicians. They need to have term limits, get them out of there, drop the salaries, drop the incentives. You're there to do a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And then once that goes away, we can start downsizing. We don't need to have bases all over the world.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, we're funding. People look at these socialist countries and say, oh, they're doing so great. You know why? Because we're footing their defense bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ukraine is probably the well, and Israel now will become a prime example. Germany.
Look at Germany. Yeah. I serve with people that talk about how great German roads are. The roads here suck. Germany has it figured out. They got it figured out.
Well, they're
a
socialist country. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't pay for their own defense.
Yeah,
that comes out of my pocket. So they get to save that money to put into their infrastructure, where we don't because we're sending it overseas. So we got to pull that back, man. We got to pull that back. Downsize the federal government. Have it turned on when it needs to be turned on and turned off when it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree that if you were to narrow everyone's term limit, no matter what, that at that point, there's not as much incentive for the individuals in Congress to basically play the system for themselves because they have, you know, a short amount of time. Like even if they were corrupt, at least, you know, hey, and you know, four, 6 years, you're going to be out of there, you know. Real quick, I just want to read some comments. Speaking of Germany, Karen Carpenter says, when I was in Germany for a while, the people got a huge amount of vacation time. Nice. Who paid for that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, set up for is UBI universal basic income? Is that what I'm?
Yes. UBI.
Yeah. So that's pretty much. Let's see. John says taxing in itself is not bad. It is the community paying for common things. It's become too much though today. They abuse it. Yeah, I definitely agree.
John summed it up perfectly. My thoughts on that is taxation should be a local thing. It should be agreed to and a local thing that helps everybody in the community to provide those things. But at a federal level, I mean, I pay money in income tax that goes to California. It goes to New York. It goes to whoever's going to play ball.
Yeah.
And even if they don't tax me, they just print more money, which is a tax on my savings. So that's a double tax, triple tax, quadruple tax. Every time they print money, it's another tax on your savings. So you can never get ahead.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that's why, you know, you're seeing all these, like, frankly, these blue states where you just have homeless running rampant, you know, and all your, because I think I saw a video, this was a while ago, a guy was interviewing a homeless guy in San Francisco. And basically just asked them, like, hey, how are you sustaining this? You know, and this dude, keep in mind, looked like a criminal. I mean, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. Okay. The guy had like face tattoos all over him. The guy looked like he'd been around, you know, and he asked him this question. He said, hey, you know, it's actually pretty simple. I sell meth to 15-year-olds and the government here in San Francisco pays me $600 a month. And that's it. That's I don't need any more than $600. I can make it happen. You know, if you're homeless, right? So, you know, I think I think John just said something too. Pretty a reality check here. Yeah, they lack transparency. Well, that's the thing. So, and I think I kind of mentioned this too on the last podcast that we did, where I think a lot of people that vote for these policies really don't. They actually can't fathom that their ideologies are extremely far left, so they just keep voting themselves into bad decisions, and then they think, oh, I'm just going to keep voting this way and it'll get me out of it, but they don't realize that their vote has actually gotten them into that in the first place.
You know, I actually wanted to bring this up earlier. We were talking about term limits.
Yeah.
And, another reason that we need term limits is because these wedge issues like abortion, gun control, all these wedge issues will never get solved if people can keep using that issue to get themselves voted in.
Yeah.
So if they have a stop, like, okay, this is my eighth year, I'm done. Maybe they'll finally do something about it.
Yeah.
You know? But no, nothing will ever be solved as long as they can just, that's like a revolving door of getting back in office, running on the same garbage. They don't have any incentive to solve it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of brings me to the next, point here that I want to touch on, which is voting rights, right? So I think the other day we were talking about Georgia, where you lived, which, and I kind of mentioned this, right? Because I've been to Atlanta more than a handful of times. I've spent, you know, plenty of time in Georgia to kind of know what the people there are like. And I was basically telling you that I do not feel personally at all that it is a blue state just from hanging out with the people. I mean, frankly, I've met like gay guys in Georgia that are Republicans, you know, so it's definitely, you know, just to touch on that real quick in terms of the election stuff. But I kind of want to go back to what we were talking about with owning land to be able to vote, right? And voting what is in your favor now. So this actually brings me to an interesting question, right? So let's just get really firm on this here, okay, in talking about old times, because I actually am with you on the point of if you own land that you should be able to vote. Now, personally, I do not own land right now. But I do pay taxes, right? So I guess that's how you kind of wedge that gap. But like, let's say for all the renters, like I know renters out there right now that actually are collecting food stamps. Now, I don't know if they are paying taxes. I don't know if they're getting tax refunds. I know that's something that you were talking about. But if, you know, this is all the case, right? Getting, collecting food stamps, getting tax refunds, working on the W-2, and you just rent, should you be able to vote?
I think it should be an audit. I don't think owning land should be a prerequisite to vote. I think having, you know, a stake in it, you know, having some skin in the game should be, because let's face it, if like I said, going back to the McDonald's thing, you know, if I could just vote my own salary and not have to work, and that's what we have. We have 50% of Americans, or right around 50% of Americans, don't have any stake in it. They don't have no skin in the game.
Sure.
So let's look at another issue. Should you have to get drug tested if you're on food stamps?
Yeah, that's right? Well, and I think that's a very valid question for sure.
Well, I mean, if I can't get a job because I'm, you know, I can't pass a drug test, then why should I get free money from somebody else that worked for it that has a job?
Yeah.
And I can't ever get a job because I, you know, I'm using that money to do drugs. And you know, I know someone's going to cry about this, but it's fact. It's a fact. There are people out there that can't keep a job because they can't stop doing drugs. And they're, you know, more and more jobs now require drug testing. So they'll sit at home and collect all these different benefits because they can't quit doing drugs. Sorry. It's just a fact.
And Karen just commented, which drugs?
Well, you know what? That's another thing too, because is it lawful to tell people they can't do drugs if they want to do drugs?
Right. You know? Yeah. We're kind of finding that out in Portland right now as they, you know, have that new policy, which, you know, personally, I'm actually in favor of all drugs being legal. I think the war on drugs should end, and it should just be all or nothing. Prohibition. Well,
and that solves the problem, because then if it's not an illegal action to, like, say, smoke marijuana or do meth or whatever, you know, as long as you can show up to work on time and do your job, you can have a job. But when you're pushing people out of work because we do have this war on drugs, and now I can't pass a drug test, so I'm just going to sit at home and do my drugs and take the money from the public who's paying taxes, you know, that's just another problem with the drug war that we've created. It's like a self-inflicted wound.
Sure. I want to touch on this clip here real quick that I don't think I've, yeah, you haven't seen this yet, so this is going to be the first time you see it. I'm going to play a little bit of it. I probably won't play the whole thing here, but let me put it in the stream here. So this is have you heard of the Whatever podcast?
No, I have not.
Okay, it's actually a pretty huge podcast. It's mostly a dating podcast, but as you can see, it got kind of controversial here with this question. So, well, I'll just let you watch it here.
Of course, men and women are different, but when it comes to rights and obligations, in the same way, for example, do you think we should repeal the 19th Amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, well... I can see why.
I mean, we're never going to. I'm being realistic. That's never going to happen. Right. Okay. I'm saying, like, it would have been better if we never had the 19th Amendment.
That's, I'm sure a lot of the girls here appreciate your hot take on women.
Do they know
women's...
what the 19th Amendment is? I
don't like. Okay, so basically, she doesn't want women to vote, is what Mary's saying here. I disagree.
I don't want
with
a lot
that.
Of people to vote, but I mean, if we're going to start somewhere.
Sure.
Let's start. I mean, there. I think that you could be uneducated. Like, that doesn't have anything to do with your gender.
I just think that women are heavily influenced by groupthink, by emotions, collectivism, and are easily brainwashed. And that's why most of them vote for the left.
You can respond.
What do you think about this?
Oh, wow. Interesting.
No, I saw this the other day, and I was thinking about our conversation just with voting rights. Obviously, incredibly controversial take, but I mean, this is a woman saying that she doesn't want herself, the right to vote.
She doesn't give herself enough credit, you know. And I agree with the other lady that said, you know, you can be a woman and you could be wealthy and you could be smart and you can do. I mean, it doesn't matter, man or woman. I just think you should have some skin in the game. and I think and I'll go one step further. When I said that if you didn't pay taxes, you shouldn't vote.
Sure.
I would say that if you're married and your spouse, whether it be a husband or wife, if they don't work, but you're still in that household that's paying taxes, then yes, you should be able to vote because, you know, you're part of society at that point.
Do you agree with her on her? I know Karen's like, I'm going to vomit.
Karen's cracking me up.
I actually want to know Karen's take on this too in the comments here. But I mean, what do you think? I mean, she actually, I mean, this is from a guy's perspective, of course, just, and I don't know, maybe I'll just get crucified for even acknowledging this comment that she made, but she did make a couple points that I thought were valid in a lot of ways. And this, of course, I always have to say this, of course, this does not apply to every woman by any means at all. But she did make a couple points about being emotionally invested in the stuff. Obviously, we know that that's more of a thing amongst the females, getting more emotionally involved in what you were talking about, like wedge issues such as abortion, such as social issues, social injustice, quotations to anyone who's audio listening. but stuff like that, you know. Definitely. I mean, she is right about that. There's a lot more women that will tend to vote for the left-leaning side of the policies there. Of course, the media and government figures cater to those sensitive subjects, especially for women. I don't think we should repeal the 19th Amendment at all. But what do you? I mean, that's pretty extreme, obviously. But what do you think? I mean, what do you think about that?
So I kind of get, yeah, she made a couple points there about the emotion. And let's face it, men and women are different, you know. They are different. I'm not going to put a blanket on anybody and say that you're a woman, so you're this way, you're a man, you're this way. But right. I don't think that women are going to vote a certain way because they're emotional. I think they've been gaslit, and I'm talking here about middle class, you know, women in the suburbs, have been gaslit and to believe in certain things, and they feel they have to vote a certain way. But you could say the same thing about men too. You know, if I want to be bravado, I'm going to be voting pro gun all day, every day, whether I own a gun or not.
Sure.
It goes both ways, in my opinion. I don't think she gave herself enough credit to think for herself.
All right. What about this? And this is just hypothetical. Frankly, it's controversial. What if you are just a housewife? You don't pay taxes. You don't work. You're just raising your kids. Should you be able to vote?
I think so, yes. If I'm a housewife and or if I'm a house husband, it doesn't matter. If my family is contributing to society, I think that we should have a say. You know,
okay.
A marriage is two people living together, and they're typically going to think kind of the same way.
Yeah, I get what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it becomes you in one flesh at that point.
Right, and
you would hope that maybe your partner would maybe vote the same way as you.
Well, I would say this. It's all about contribution to society. So,
right.
And I fell into this where I was the only one working in my household. But it's my wife's hard work that allowed us to take care of the household.
Sure.
So essentially, she was working too, that allowed me to go work to earn the money. So it was a team effort. So okay. I think that in that case, yeah, you should be able to vote. But if you're... I'm talking about if you pay negative taxes and you're slumming off the system and you're loving it, I don't think you should have a say in like where someone else's tax money goes, because it's going to go into your pocket with the policies you vote on. So
no, I think that's a super valid consensus. I'd have to agree. And I definitely agree with you about, the joint household thing. Like the only reason you're able to hold down that job to feed your family is because your wife is also working to help you out. Even if she doesn't have a job on paper, it's her job to help out your household at that point, right?
Here's a great solution. Why don't we just get rid of the welfare state and get rid of the income tax, and then everybody can vote?
Yeah, I like that. In fact, you can. Here's a shameless plug for everybody here. you can let me pull this up real quick. If you would like to pre-order this merch here that I have here, let me pull it up on the screen. This is how to not be on welfare. Now you can the only way that you could really purchase this shirt is frankly if you're not on welfare. If you want to, if you are on welfare, which could be for a multitude of reasons, you could always use your welfare money to purchase this product and help support the podcast. So just a shameless plug here. I am doing pre-orders on the How to Not Be on Welfare shirt. And this conversation, see, I actually wasn't even going to plug this, but this conversation literally just reminded me I need to plug these shirts. Still working on a distributor at the moment here, but yes, How to Not Be on Welfare, coming to a city near you at some point.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to hate on people that have a hard time out there, just so people understand. But like I said, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When the government gets too greedy and businesses shut down, people are going to lose jobs. They're going to have to go on these welfare programs. And then there's no incentive to go back to work as long as you're getting paid. Maybe there's nowhere to go back to work.
Well, you saw a lot of that. Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is welfare is misconstrued. Like a lot of people just think of it in the actual literal term of what welfare is supposed to be. But welfare can be many things. I mean, what, like, just in a metaphorical sense, I mean, what we saw like with stimulus checks is a form of welfare. And I mean, a lot of people were just collecting unemployment. That can turn into a form of welfare. Mm-hmm. If you abuse that, and it's actually pretty easy to abuse. You know, food stamps can be a form of welfare. So I think anything where you're able, and of course, I agree with you that, of course, there's people down on their luck. It's kind of a balance, but welfare does not incentivize you in this country to go back to work. That's the problem, yeah. I think, that we're talking about here.
And when we get back to the taxes, if we stopped printing money to where your actual time that you spend at work is worth something, the community can take care of those people. They don't need to pull money from taxes. It's just like, it's a snowball effect. You know, they tax you to the hilt. Now people can't afford to donate to the church where the church can take care of people. You know, I think taxation is ultimately the problem. If you do away with the taxation, you know, minimal taxation for your community, you know, for what you agree to pay for, whether it's to power the street lamps, to have the streets plowed in the wintertime, whatever, minimal, get rid of it so people can keep more of their money. The Fed's got to stop printing money, because if I spend 8 hours today and earn $100, but that $100 only buys me $50 worth of stuff tomorrow, what happened to my 4 hours?
Yeah,
us in this rat race, so we can't take care of each other.
I think that's what it is for a lot of people, is the system. I mean, it is like a cycle, right? And recently I read a statistic that apparently if you make, so I'm 24 years old right now. So this article is for 25 year olds. So what's the difference really? And it was basically, if you're 25 and you make 75 grand a year right now, this guy did the math, right? And he pretty much deducted every expense in a logical sense that you typically have. And it left you with about $600 a month. And then he basically factored in, well, with that $600, you know, maybe you can go out on a couple dates. So spare yourself like $300 for that and then save nothing. So now there is no middle class, essentially. So like for my generation, all the stimulus checks that got printed, I'm going to be paying for that for the rest of my life, whether I know it or not, right? A lot of people are like, well, how are you going to pay for that? Well, now $20 an hour is what $10 an hour used to be maybe 8 years ago. So every 10 years, inflation is like hitting us by $10, right? So all of a sudden you're making good money. Next year you could be making terrible money. And that's how you end up paying for all the stimulus checks, all the welfare state that we have going on. And of course, $600 is kind of an ironic number, right?
Yeah. $666.
Well, that too. I was going to say, I think, I want to say it was under Trump where we all got sent $600. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. And, I actually did the math on it, figuring out how many people actually pay taxes in this country. And, you know, some people get the stimulus check and they'll never have to pay it back because they don't pay taxes.
Right.
But for those who do, it was a ridiculous, it was like four or five times is what they had to pay back to get that money that was imposed on them. I didn't want a stimulus check. but I was going to be forced to pay for it anyway. So you know, I cashed the check. But here's the real problem is we looking at welfare state and especially anybody who's on a fixed income, say like Social Security, a retirement, something like that. It gets adjusted for inflation every year, but after the fact. So that entire year, let's say you're on Social Security and your dollar does not go as far as it's supposed to go. That entire year, it gets diminished, diminished, diminished. They say, we'll fix that on January 1st or whatever, they fix it. And then you start getting bled out the rest of the year after. So I don't know. It's just, it's a horrible thing, man. It's like we've cut our legs off. We cut our arms off. And I don't know. We're ahead now. You know?
Yeah. I'm just reading these. I agree with you, Karen. $600 is insulting. Honestly, $1,400 is insulting. Is that going to really pay for anything? Maybe your rent. That might cover 1 month worth of rent.
You can't get a full basket of groceries for $600 now. You can't.
Yeah. That's actually true.
Food, you know, like actually healthy food. You can't.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And in terms of the, did you get all three stimulus checks?
I think I only got one.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I got two of them. And I got like the 1400 one. I didn't get the first one. And then I got the 600 one. And, you know, they just sent it on a little debit card, right? And then I got the $1,400 one. And then I noticed that that same year, I ended up paying for my tax bill was like higher than it had ever been.
Yeah, well, that's because they deferred the income tax, I believe, or they deferred some tax and then it had to be paid back later. So
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And then they shifted all the whole tax season. Right. So I just want to bring up the 16th Amendment here. You sent this to me earlier.
Yeah.
Can you just sum this up for me or did you?
It basically talks about the history of the income tax. So the income tax was a temporary thing. First time it was introduced was during the Civil War. And then later on.
That was Union Army. Am I correct about that?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, well, I can't read it. It's kind of small on the screen here.
Oh, man. I apologize.
But no, then they brought it back to fund. Was it World War I or World War II? I can't remember that they brought it back as a temporary thing, but then it just never went away. That's the problem. We weren't designed to have an income tax in this country to fund the federal government.
Yeah, well, this would be probably a conversation for a separate podcast, but that would be the transition, what you're talking about, into Lincolnian America, from Jeffersonian America to Lincolnian America, which was basically taking the Federalist system. Now, a lot of people get it conflated with the Federalist system. They think, oh, Federalist, that means pro-federal government. It's actually the contrary. Federalist is opposite. Federalist is being a small federal government, pro-state government, right? Because it used to be the United States are, now it is the United States is, as we are a collective under federal government. To any of you that have not read the book, The Real Lincoln, just a side note, I recommend. Have you read that? Have you know about that book?
I have not, but I'm going to take a note right now.
Yeah, I would. You guys should check out. Actually, I think I've heard David Knight talk about that book a couple times and Gerald Celente too. The Real Lincoln, super good read. If you want to know more about Civil War history, like the real Civil War history, I would check out Abbeville Institute. They're based out of, I believe, South Carolina. Donald Livingston is kind of like the guy who runs everything, and he has a lot of speeches on YouTube that you can check out through that. But he kind of talks about the shift from what I just said with Jeffersonian America to Lincolnian America. That's kind of what it's called. And right now would be semi what we're living in, basically the product of Lincoln into crony capitalism, where you have income tax. And the federal government runs your life.
I think it would be nice if every year, I mean, because we have to pay our taxes or they come put us in jail, right? But there's no obligation for them to provide a receipt. I would like to see where that money goes.
Absolutely.
Know? And I know it would be a long receipt, but I think that should be a requirement for the federal government. If they're going to take your money, they have to account for that money. And it needs to be made public. Maybe at some website or something where you can look at line items, you know, this amount of money. And I'm not talking about defense. Okay. I'm not saying oh, this much money was spent on defense, this much money was spent on missiles, this much money was sent to Ukraine, this much money was spent on payroll. I want to know line by line what, where my money is going. And I think sure. that's not too much to ask for. If you're going to take my money from me or force me to go to jail, I want to know where it's going.
Well, I think that's what it is, right? You're forced to go to jail. What do you think, just to kind of wrap the subject up here, what is the ultimate big picture solution that you see fit?
Cut the government down to a very small size.
How do you see that being achieved?
Start firing people. I mean,
I wish I had the Trump meme right now.
step one would be term limits and salary caps for all of our politicians. Step two, if you want to have aides and all this and people to help you, because, you know, one politician comes with a whole plethora of people around them that are getting paid somehow. Pay for it yourself. You know, I pay you to do the job, not three people that follow you around like a little puppy dog.
Oh, you're talking about what is that called? Like when they have, yeah, I know the what you're internship. Saying. Yeah, yeah, like when you got doing the work for them. Like someone asking the phone.
They chalk that up and say, oh, it's an expense, and then they get paid for that additionally. Also, if you're on a committee, one of the things that they get paid extra for is being on a committee. And I believe they get paid extra the rest of their life. So no extra for committees. You should be doing stuff because you want to do it, because it's in your agenda, your constituents' agenda to do that, not because it's going to get you some extra money. Close all the foreign bases that we don't need to have out there. We don't need to have bases all over the world. Let's stop paying for other countries' defense. I know some people aren't a fan of it, but this free trade crap, look, they manipulate their currency and it throws it off balance. I think that we should be able to charge a tariff on goods. They charge us a tariff, just at least match their tariff.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I lived in Japan, to buy a brand new US automobile, like a Chevy or something, 100% tariff. So if it was a $20,000 car, it was $40,000.
What?
So, yeah. So why would we bring in a Japanese car here with zero tariff?
Wow. That
doesn't make any sense. But that,
you know what? Truth. Okay. That is, wow. Yeah. Actually, that really is kind of mind blowing to think about that, because I don't know if I've ever thought about it, because that does actually eliminate free trade, right? Well, it's not even free trade at that point. It just eliminates, I think I might have said it maybe like this the first time, but basically committing espionage through trade with other countries.
I mean, I'm in favor of no tariff whatsoever, but we have to get the other end to do the same.
Right, so but it gets you to
trade with them.
Yeah, but it gets you to be able to possibly bring industry back into the country,
yeah,
is what you're saying, right?
That's the thought of it. The thought is, if you charge a tariff and level the playing field, that you'll bring industry back to the U.S. But when we have these crazy taxes on industry, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so the tax issue has to be addressed. But I don't know. It's weird, because you got to downsize government and you got to get rid of taxes, but you can't get rid of the taxes until you downsize the government, because you got to pay for the government. It's
Do you think anything like with the IRS will change come the 2024 election?
I think that we're going to have more IRS workers to enforce the new laws, you know, whatever the new laws are. I mean, we got, 80,000 new, and I know it's not 80,000 overnight. It's over the next several years. But do you think that those 80,000 IRS agents they're trying to hire, do you think that they are going to go after the small amount at the top, the rich? Or do they need that many people to come after the middle class and the lower class?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think that's a precursor to CBDC. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to be forced into CBDC, and people who are still using cash or barter system or something, that's what the extra agents are for. I think they're going to find out, like, hey, how did you pay your mortgage all year long whenever I don't see you getting paid through the CBDC system? I think that's what's coming.
That is another interesting thought. Yeah, with the tracking, for sure. It just actually, man, I think you might have just laid it out. That is the segue for the IRS with CBDC right there. Yeah, basically, if you don't use our way of paying to basically prove your income we're going to arrest you, right? That's how you get everyone. Yep. That's it right there. Wow.
That's just me speculating. I don't have any proof of that. That's just kind of like putting the puzzle pieces together.
No, that's a big one actually. Cause I think about that a lot with the CBDC. And I think last year I remember, David Knight. Yeah. Karen, no cash is definitely another. And you see a lot of businesses, I actually wrote an article about that last year. I need to put it on the site about CBDC. And yeah, with seeing all the businesses, especially during the 2020 crisis there, you started seeing a lot of businesses start going to cashless. And the way that I saw that, and I'm sure you probably saw it kind of this way too, was basically, you know, hey, cash is dirty. It has germs on it. Don't even use it. Pay with a credit card. Here's the card reader. Use a QR code to scan your Apple Pay, right? It's using,
you know what's funny is that a lot of Starbucks I heard went cashless.
Oh yeah.
But they still have the little jar out there to put a tip.
Yeah, hypocrites. Yeah. I know. I really, you know, to be honest, I'm kind of a hypocrite because I go to Starbucks often enough, and I shouldn't. I should not give them my, I need to do what David Knight does. And just when you are trying to boycott a business, just don't go there under any circumstances. Like, Whole Foods, actually, Whole Foods, don't go, like, don't shop at Whole Foods. They have the, I don't know if you know about this, the hand scanners now that will scan your palm so you can pay. I mean, I've literally watched people go sign up for it. It's like, and I've made comments to people in line before doing the hand scanner where I'm like, do you even realize like what you're doing? And they're like, I mean, they'll say like a stupid answer, right? They're like, well, yeah, I'm, you know, signing up to pay for my groceries, right? And it's like, no, you're actually, you know, putting into the system here to roll out central bank digital currency. This is part of that, what you're doing right now, you know, because that, you know, say no more, I guess. Yeah, Whole Foods is Amazon. Yeah, you're right about that. Shop at Sprouts. Karen, I actually got kicked out of Sprouts about, this would have been 2020 for not wearing a mask. So I never shopped there again. I don't know if Sprouts is independently owned or not, but I decided to never shop at Sprouts after that. They actually threatened to call the police on me when I was in the checkout. I was actually this close to checking out. And see, here's
they were going to call the police on you for not wearing a mask?
Yeah, so basically what happened, right? I was actually like anti-mask from like day one. Like I just already knew better, right? Because I'd been looking at all this stuff way before this ever happened. And I'm sure like you, you know, as well. So when the mask rollout happened, I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to, no matter what, I'm not doing that. Even at my own job at the time, I refused to do it. And on a side note, I realized, you know, the more you actually double down on that, the more people are afraid to tell you to do it. But I went into, like my own work actually after a while just gave up. Like I literally was like, no, I'm not going to wear a mask. And then they just like stopped even trying. Right. But I went into Sprouts with actually, you know, what's funny. I think this day, cause I lived in Nashville right at the time. So it's a big city. So Nashville is very blue. So sometimes, and this was actually, I think I was at work. At the time, when I first moved to Nashville, I was working at a gourmet kitchen as a chef on the side before, like just in limbo, you know? So I had to go like pick up some stuff from Sprouts. And I was like, well, I don't have a choice. Like I actually have to go to Sprouts for work. So I put on like, you know, the mask doing like the half nose thing. Like I didn't even put the whole thing up, right? Because I was just trying to get the stuff and leave. And at the cash register, this lady checking me out in line is like, hey, you have to put it over your nose. And I literally made the comment to her. I actually pulled down the mask at this point. I'm like, lady, I am like this close for you just to ring me up and like let me leave the store. It's not a big deal. Like just check me out of the line. Well, instead she ends up calling the manager. And then the manager, we're going back and forth about you had to put the mask over your nose now. It's not even about the mask thing, right? Because I still had the half chop going on. and it just turned into this whole thing. And at this point, I was like, you know what? No, I'm actually just not going to do it. So call the police. And then at that point, when he said he was going to call the police, I was like, well, is this worth it enough for me to go to jail today? You know, was basically because I know
how could they put you in jail because there was no law,
right? It's an ordinance, right?
Trespassing, maybe.
Well, that they always there's two things that, I know, like now we're kind of off topic on the subject, but there's two things that I've noticed the police will do when they don't know the Constitution. They will, there's two things they will get you for, what you just said, trespassing or disorderly conduct,
yeah, and it's or all resisting arrest
or resisting arrest.
What was I resist or what was I being arrested for?
Yeah,
I've seen that where people get charged solely with resisting arrest, but there was no reason to arrest them. So how can you resist something that should not have happened?
Yeah, you know what? We actually should do a podcast where we just dive into like those fundamental constitutional rights, because my whole family is cops, and my family will tell you not to talk to the police.
Oh, it's they say anything you say can and will be used against you. They never say, oh, we might use it in your favor.
Yeah.
Tell us the right thing. They're not going to do that.
No, yeah. Yeah, I mean, from a constitutional standpoint, I don't talk to police. I don't even want to deal with the police. And I probably won't call the cops. I mean, I'm that kind of guy. I really don't want to deal with that. And if it can be handled man to man, you know, why call the cops? But obviously, you know, the coward at Sprouts wanted to call the cops. So at that point, I decided it was not worth my time and I left. But yeah, I don't shop at Sprouts anymore. yeah, I'm just going to read a couple comments here and then we can wrap it up, Jason. I love Sprouts.
I've never heard of a Sprouts. That must be a city thing.
Oh, you never heard of Sprouts?
No, no.
Oh, it's kind of like a, it's just a, oops, I didn't mean to do that. Sorry. well, I don't know. How would you describe Sprouts, Karen?
Is it like Whole Foods?
It's kind of like Whole Foods, but it's okay. A little bit more like hippie-ish, in my opinion. Whole Foods is like, you got like a
farmer's market kind of place.
Yeah, they sell like more like esoteric goods there that you wouldn't normally get at regular grocery. Like they sell like tapioca powder, which is kind of harder to find at like a Safeway, if you know what I'm saying. I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah, they have a lot of organic food. I shop at Trader Joe's. I don't know. It's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, lots of vitamins. Well, anyways, thank you to everybody in the chat today for chiming in here in the conversation. This was fun. I think we're going to try to do this podcast every Friday. You know, at least I will be. Hopefully Jason can, but if not, it's okay. But yeah, we're going to try to do this on Fridays, possibly at the same time here. Because I think what were you saying that doesn't interfere, right, with freedom, free world
FM? No, that's going to be on Saturdays for us.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, it doesn't have the time slot. So, yeah, and I think we're scheduled to have Billy Ray Valentine on January 19th. So that's we will be live for that, and yeah, thank you guys for being. You have any last words about our? Oh, I'm sorry. Let me take this off now. Do you have any last words for today?
Nothing. I stand firm that if you don't pay taxes, I don't think you should have. You shouldn't be able to say where the money goes if you don't contribute to the pile.
You should not have voting rights.
Well, I hate to say it that way, but that's kind of what it means.
hold on one second here. I'm just going to, one last time before we end the stream here, I know I'm going to shamelessly plug one more time because I forgot to mention, if you would like to pre-order this shirt, because again, I don't have it out yet, but if you would like to pre-order the shirt, you can just shoot me either a message on Twitter /X. I don't like calling it X because I don't want to give Elon the credit for that. So I call it Twitter. you can shoot me a message on Twitter or send me an email to thepurgenewsmedia@gmail.com. If you would like to get the How to Not Be on Welfare t-shirt, I will do pre-orders for $25. I probably will end up selling them for $30, though, when they are actually like out and I have the product in hand. There will also be a couple other shirts coming out soon that we've, you know, kind of just collaborated on, me and my buddies that like making offensive stuff that's kind of clever and funny. So stay tuned for that. We have a shirt coming out that is, that says San Freak Psycho. So
that's a good one.
If you'd like any of that, just, you know, hit me on Twitter or my email. Jason, thank you so much, man, for being here. And till next time.
All right, let me, for having me, brother.
Absolutely. All right.